How can we instill meaning into boring services? That's what we chatted about with Joël Hugli in an interview for my next book on how to create services that serve both humans and nature. Joël is a mattress designer, researcher, Green Concept Award nominee, and Design Prize Switzerland winner. He is the founder of Ecomate, which aims to improve sleeping comfort with Swiss quality and sustainability. With Joël, we uncovered these five early service design principles to create more meaning in boring services and products like mattresses. Write a secret shitty personal manifesto about your own values. Do the edge of the mattress check to verify if you really live your values. Be stupidly naive about your field by asking why this is done like this. Ask yourself, what happens at the end of a service? Don't get stuck in one emotionally loaded sustainability topic. Instead, do the math to reveal the biggest impact and leverage you could have on the planet. Thanks so much to Joël for this unboring and lovely conversation.
Hey Joël, such a big pleasure to see you again.
Hello Daniele, thank you for welcoming me here. It's a pleasure to have a chat with you now.
Yeah, we've been in touch through LinkedIn messages and other ways about service design and other stuff. But I'm excited because today I get to steal 1 hour of your time to look into your brain about all things ecology, sustainability, design. And so I'm very excited about this conversation. But before we get into that, I have one question, which is, when you go to a birthday party, how do you present yourself?
That's a good question. So first, I do not try to talk about my profession too much at birthday parties, I would say. But if it comes to this topic, then I would describe myself as a sustainable product designer who is working in research at the University of Applied Science and Arts in Lucerne. And besides that, I'm currently developing my startup as an entrepreneur and designer for sustainable Swiss mattresses. I think that sums it up more or less.
And I've seen you are one of those guys who we can call award-winning designer. When I looked at your website, I was like, oh, fuck, he has a lot of these things.
Yeah, that's actually, it's obviously a big honor to be awarded in, for some of the work. And it's also like, somehow a bit, and it's a good feeling to be awarded because it's often such a huge effort that I or people have put into those projects, and especially now with my mattress topic, which evolved from my master thesis. This is great to see, like how many people are actually interested in mattresses, because it's already a bit a strange topic, but I think the people are getting more and more aware of why we need to look into topics that are not that relevant in social media or newspaper, like a mattress. And it's great to see that it gets recognized from the community.
And that's one of the things that I love about your approach. It's a bit harshly said, you're working on one of the most unsexy things on the planet. But at the same time, you do it with such a passion. And I think many people which are building services or products, there are many unsexy services and products, but necessary. And still, you have passion. And I think you can be a really good example for people of these unsexy, boring services to see that, yeah, we still can be very passionate about. I'm very curious. So today, you ended up being a very niche with these mattresses and stuff. But what's up with your journey? How did you arrive in these topics of sustainability? What's up with your sustainability journey?
So originally I started, I wanted to get into more into the creative field. So I started to work in an architectural office in Bern in Switzerland, did an apprenticeship as an architectural draftsman. And then I noticed, there's this thing called industrial design and product design. And I started to study it and got the tools of being a product designer. But during my studies, I began a bit to question my profession. And during this time, I also noticed a book of Viktor Papanek. I actually have it here with me because I think it's one of the, or if not the key role of my change of mindset. It's called Design for the Real World. And I love the first sentence in it because Viktor Papanek describes the profession of a product designer as one of the worst professions on the world. And this somehow shocked me a bit at this time, because I just was a few months ago from being a fully finished, if you want like that, product designer. And then someone said in a book from about 50 years ago that this profession is actually not a good one. Simple said. And then I started to question myself from what am I really doing here? It's a lot focusing on consuming, and it's not a consume in a good way. Like, it's really about money and consuming as much as possible. And we are just, as a product designer, I would be part of that. And then I started to reevaluate a bit what I want to achieve, what I want to contribute. And I wrote a small manifesto for myself. And from this point on, I tried to be on this path from this manifesto that I wrote back then. This was about 8 years ago. And after that, I had some difficulties to find a job in the design field, because a lot of these jobs are focusing again on consuming, and not in a good way. And by luck, I got into a research job, the one I'm still in it now. And during this time, I also did my part-time master with you as a coach as well. I think two or three times you were my coach for my master thesis. And the master thesis then was about the approach for more sustainable mattresses and my startup now. So that's a bit the rough sketch out of how I got into this and what led me to reevaluate work or my profession.
It's inspiring to see how a book can change our perspective. I feel we share a similar story there. There was also a book for me that kind of shifted my attention from, for me it was graphic design back then. And then yeah. I was like, you can do something which is useful. I don't have just to do ads, and that's fun, but there is other stuff that we get to.
Which book was it for you?
It was the book about service design, the one from Andy and Ben Riesel. And for me, it was like the discovery, because I came from a much more kind of artistic school where it was beauty. We don't give a fuck about it as long as it looks great. It's kind of like seeing, there are humans, can serve them. That's interesting.
Yeah, I feel you.
It's interesting. And there is another thing that I find extremely interesting in your story is how you had the guts, the inspiration to write a personal manifesto. So what was in that manifesto?
Yeah, so I read it, like, from time to time I do read it again, but it's written in a horrible way. I remember because it was more a spontaneous sort of action to write it down, because I felt the need to have this as a guidance for later. Because I see a bit the problem that as soon as you get out of studies and you need to have a job and everything, then you lose a bit your own personal values. Like you're losing them a bit up, and sustainability is maybe not that important anymore. I'm just happy if I have a job which is paying me well. With this manifesto, I want to reduce this risk. And therefore, I wrote down things like that I really value my personal interests and my motivation higher than monetary reasons or monetary payouts, salaries, for example. And one aspect is also that I want to have, with my work, I want to have a more positive impact than the negative impact I'm having with my life, like the consumption. Like, everything I'm consuming has a negative impact. And the least I want to do is to compensate somehow this negative impact with my work as a sustainable product designer.
For someone who is listening to you and say, wow, that sounds pretty great, this idea of, let's call it, writing a bit of a shitty personal manifesto, not putting too much pressure on it has to be very philosophical and stuff. It can be badly written, but it showcases the values. How can someone get started with this? What if this could be an interesting exercise? What's a question to answer? What's a good start?
That's a good question. I think there's a bit the fear of the white paper. I think that's a common fear in creative business. I don't remember exactly how I did it back then, but I think it helps to just try to have a bit a list of personal values. And then you write down some of these values and then you try to rank them. And by that, you can formulate a bit the more elaborated text and try to context it with why you want to be or act like that. And maybe you can also reference it to some other literature or projects or designers that inspire you and just fill this manifesto, shitty manifesto, as you said it, I like this name, to get bigger and then have some importance.
I like this idea of saying it's hard to get started. So maybe starting with just a few bullet points, just like keywords, and then starting to rank them and then say, okay, now I feel that I can start to write. Maybe another piece of advice that we could explore is this idea of sometimes people, it's hard to start writing, especially for this kind of stuff. So maybe we could have kind of a sentence. In life, I think I should value this for the next 20 years. 2 points.
Yeah.
And you make a bullet list of 10 points.
Yeah, like building block, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a start. Obviously, it will change, but it's, oh, I already have a bit of a starting point and maybe this can guide.
Yeah, and to have in mind, it's only for yourself. I never, ever has someone read this manifesto, but I tell a lot of people about this manifesto, that I have it. And this helps me actually to like, because some people will ask me, are you still on the path that you wrote down in your manifesto? And then I have to evaluate this on myself, but I will not hand out this manifesto. So it can be shitty and it still has its purpose. And I think that's also one aspect to have this in mind. It doesn't need to be good grammatically.
And you're adding a one word that is extremely important, which is secret shitty manifesto. Because by making it secret, it just keeps the pressure low. And at the same time, it's like your little diary, your little private thing. And if you fail at it, you're the only one who knows that you failed at it, which is already like a big enough pressure in life. So that's a very great piece of advice. Thanks so much. That's super interesting because I think this is exactly the type of stuff that if we look not just at services as these fuzzy, strange, intangible things, they are made of humans. And I think this piece of advice is already like a principle that can help people who have a business or who are working in a service. Someone who is a barista can still say, before I'm going to start my job as a barista, let me write down what's important for me for the 20 next years. And then when they are at work, they can try to remember, the way I'm working, does that fit with my values? Some of these values might be linked to planetary stuff and maybe not. That's then up to the person. But that's a very interesting exercise also in pushing employees maybe also to do that, writing your personal values. And then see, should you fire yourself because you're not at the good place for your values?
Yeah. And I think it's a huge chance for people if the personal values are more or less similar to the job you're doing or to the company that you're working for. It's like you will, or I notice at least in my case, I'm so much more motivated to do like maybe some extra hours or this extra mile and to just get out of bed. Like
mattress designer who goes out of bed. That's
yeah. And they actually have somehow a principle about this. Like when you're on the edge of your bed in the morning and you don't want to work, if it's like that every day, you need to change your job. Like I call it the edge of the mattress problem. I'm not sure if I read it somewhere or if it's something I'm just, but it helps me. And now I don't have this problem anymore because they are so similar. The values from my research, from the research group I'm working for, and my own personal values.
That's a very good, other very simple, if on the morning, you're on the edge of the patches. Oh, fuck my life. And you're doing that a few times per week.
Yeah.
Maybe there is something to change. Yeah.
Might then be maybe don't do it on Monday, because Monday is always a bit rough, right? But on a Tuesday, if it's always like that on a Tuesday, then you should question yourself, your choice of the profession. Yeah.
Yeah. And on the day after a breakup or a hangover might not be also the best time to do that.
Yeah. There are some exceptions, right? Yeah.
And now, like, to explore what you're doing with it called EchoMade, your startup. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, I'd like to know, what's the stuff that you learned in these last 2 years, maybe, where you are like, oh shit, if only I knew that. And that's really stuff that I could tell to a friend who's starting a business, a service, a product business, a startup, to not only do some great, interesting work, but also to do work that has a bit of a purpose. Is there something that you learned in the last years that you feel like, oh, this is a key that I now have and that I would have been super happy to have had before?
So, yeah, I think there are a few learnings. Maybe one aspect is more in the conceptual phase. So I think it's quite helpful to have in the beginning of a new project or of a startup, goal of a startup. I see it as a big chance to have this mindset to be really curious and naive a bit almost. Because from this, you can then do some research, you can observe stuff, processes and things that are important for the project. And then you can learn from it and question it. Because of this naive Einstellung, personal mindset. Yeah, thank you. From this naive personal mindset, then you can really improve something in a new and innovative and sustainable way. Because obviously it has been done all the time in the past, this thing that you want to improve. And the people who are in this field, they don't have this luck to question it in the perspective that a new person does it. So from this re-questioning and evaluating comes a big chance, and therefore it can lead to a great improvement in terms of sustainability. And I think it was the same with my mattress project. So it started during the master thesis, and I had so many interviews and I visited several production sites and did a lot of hands-on stuff and just tried to learn as much as possible, like a sponge, to soak it up. And then came the point where I was on a level of know-how that I really felt comfortable in improving the things I researched about. And from this point on, it was way more about the ideation and prototyping process and not that much about the research process. And this obviously led to some valuable outcomes and results that helped me to then continue with the startup.
So what are some of these stupidly naive questions that you asked either yourself or to people? Can you maybe share an example and how this question set the pace for your startup?
So I think in my case, it was a lot about materials. A mattress is often a big mix out of different materials. And in the end, you don't know what's inside anymore. And it's really difficult to make a mattress ecologically sustainable or circular. And therefore, I worked together with some people from the mattress industry. And I was just always asking, why is this material there? What's doing that here? And then I soon noticed, wait a moment, like, a lot of these extra materials and cuts and designs they put into a mattress are actually just for aesthetical reasons. Because you mentioned it at the beginning, a mattress is actually not that interesting to people. It's they call it a low interest product. And to make a mattress more interesting, the industry tried to add more colors and extra design features and stuff like that. And so I noticed like a lot of the effort is actually done in the wrong area. So it would be way better to improve other things like circularity and not care that much about the aesthetical design, focus more on construction of the mattress and the materials and reduced amount of materials. And yeah, so that was just one part where I had this learning of, actually, it doesn't make that much sense to me when I came into this field. For sure, marketing is important as well, but it's a question of how balanced is it?
Super interesting, this kind of question. Guys, why do we do this?
Yeah.
Just, I'm happy to do it, but just before I get started, why? It's one of these very fresh questions. My kid was in this why phase for a moment, and it's been super inspiring to get him like asking, like, Daddy, why do we do that? Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Okay. It's an interesting question. And especially when it's done in a bit of a naive way, I think that adds, when it's not this why, like consultants, the consultant why is what, like, the worst thing when you come in a suit and say, why do you do that?
Yeah.
Which is like this, you're stupid. But there it's like a more a why that comes with, I don't understand because I'm new here. So please don't hurt me. But still, could I have an answer?
Yeah.
It's a very different why. And I think maybe that's another question that I'd like to hear from you is, how do you frame this why questions without them being, again, this consultant feeling of, oh, I'm an expert and I'm questioning everything you do because I'm looking at it as a researcher and I know best. And instead being this kind of naive, I'm interested, I'm passionate, I might ask stupid stuff. How do you frame it so that it has the right intention?
So I brought up some important points there. I think like one aspect is for sure also to make, or at least in my case, I did it often like that I wanted to also share my vision with them. So I didn't just do research about the mattresses because I was interested in the mattress. I wanted, in the end, it had the goal to lead the mattress industry into a more sustainable economy. And so I shared this vision with them, and simultaneously I showed my real interest. So I was really curious to see what they are doing. Like, I was interested in their company and their processes, and it was an honest interest. And I cannot tell you how I exactly formulate this question, but I can more tell you share with you like that I had this real, I tried to show my real interest. And I think with this attitude, the people on the other end were also more interested to share what they have and like to have this honesty and not like this consultant selling thing vibe. So an honest interest about the topic helps a lot.
It feels as if you, instead of just asking the question, you're already revealing, before I ask you a question, my bias is this. Where I try to go is there. So that's why I'm asking these questions. And then you're like, okay, I might like to help him with his vision. Or you might just say, oh, this is something I don't want to help him with. So I don't want to even answer the question. But it's interesting, this notion that we often ask questions, but don't reveal the intensity behind the question. And that's when this kind of weird feeling can come, like, why is he asking this question? What does he want to try to do with me? But in a way, you were very provocative by saying, my intent is to push this industry towards a more sustainable way, which is not an easy thing to hear from the industry. But at the same time, I feel people were receptive to that, even if it was a bit of a provocative thing.
Yeah, I think it's, as you summarized it quite well. So it's, and not all of the people are interested in it then, right? Some people close up and then you notice anyway, it's maybe not the right person to collaborate with, or maybe not the right time because there's a lot of pressure from somewhere on this company. And then you ask again a few months later. But it's worth a shot for sure. And it has a bit the limitation that I noticed in some cases when I came in with the attitude that I wanted to ask a lot about the processes and maybe to have in mind like optimizations for sustainable reasons, then the people also try to give me answers which are already going in this direction. So that's like also a difficult balance to not let them know too much so they can share what they know and not adapt their answers already to the things I want to hear. But that's always the thing, like always a problem in interviews anyway.
Yeah, obviously it's being respectful by revealing the intent, but still not biasing them too much. That they give you the answer that you want to hear and not the answer that they have, which is obviously a different thing. You are asking this very good question, which is like, why do we do this? Are there other questions that you'd like to suggest? Again, I'm thinking about a dentist, a barista, someone who, a pastor, these kind of jobs where they are not into service design, they might not be into sustainability, but they might be curious about it, but about intention. What are early tiny things that they can question themselves to get started a bit in a more sustainable journey? Are there other questions other than why do this?
Yeah. So a thing that, which is quite important from the perspective of a product designer is for sure the paradigm shift or change to from a linear economy. So take, make, dispose economy, from a linear economy to a circular economy, is to think about the whole supply chain and then try to loop it as often as possible. In this regard, it's quite important to ask, for example, what happens when the consumer has its product? Where does he or she dispose it? And is this the right way to dispose it? Or should we take it back and recycle it on ourselves, like by ourselves? Maybe the product has some value, still some value that we can use and recycle it in a closed loop, or maybe take out some components and reuse them, repurpose them. And so that's already a quite simple question, which a lot of developers are not asking themselves that often or not at all. So already to have in mind, like, how could a circular approach to this product look? And this is a big challenge for a lot of them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the ending question, knowing, okay, we're printing. We have, I think, someone that we both know is Joe McLeod. I might give his last name in a very strange way. But Joe, who writes this book about endings and engineering, which is asking the question, how do we end things? Which is a very specific question, which is a very good question, because often we spend so much energy thinking about how do we get people in? How do we get people to use it? And then not thinking so much about the end. I'm curious, because you're taking obviously a product perspective where there is like a creation of something
more physical. Yeah.
How would we do the same for, maybe, I don't know, you're an accountant? How can we help an accountant to be more circular? Do you have maybe, can we play a little bit this experiment of trying to think, how can we help an accountant to be more circular, more sustainable? Are there tips that you could imagine for him?
That's a good question. I haven't done projects in this field yet, I think. Because I'm mostly focusing on fiber-based materials, or at least physical materials. But if I look at an accountant, I think maybe like it's a bit all connected, because an accountant has, in some companies, they have direct touch points with end consumers, and they play also a big part, like they have a role within the circular economy as well. If it's, again, example of the mattresses, if it's about the take-back system of mattresses. So the end consumer must have somehow, must need to gain something, or have to have a really easy process to give back their old mattresses. And I think an accountant can promote this by providing them a really simple solution to sign up for this return of the old mattress, or to get a discount, or to make it as comfortable as possible for them. But I don't think in my understanding, I don't see now a direct, like within only in this job, I don't see it going there or it playing out there? Because circularity is anyway always an approach with so many stakeholders. There are so many stakeholders along the value chain, and it needs a lot of different professions and companies. And I think accountant is just one part in this circular economy. You have something in mind?
I would summarize it because I see there is something interesting here to me, which is you're looking at the accountant as part of a system. And you're saying, sure, the accountant himself, outside of recycling his sticky notes, might not be like the bigger circular guy in the world, but he can, with his process knowledge, help others do more circular stuff because he can make it easier from like a tax perspective or a forms perspective that you say, it's just one click of a button and I can get my money kick back if I give back my mattress. It's okay. This is a big difference because usually accountant world, it's very detailed, it's very complex, it's very rich and legal and compliant. But let's see, okay, how can we still make it legal compliant? But something that has a kind of a simplicity that pushes people to be motivated to do the circle of things. So it's a very interesting way of looking at the accountant as part of the system, and maybe he can help in that perspective.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to have from time to time a chat with them, because often we overlook positions like that. And I think especially in the research phase, in this naive and curious phase, it's great to have a chat with them because they have a lot of know-how. And maybe they are not the creative people who are building things in a way, like services or products. They still have their thoughts, and they know maybe which screw could be more tightened or changed. So that's great to have a perspective from them as well, included in the research phase.
Yeah, we could propose it's this little piece of advice to say, hey, go chat with the back office guys and ask them, okay, I have this vision. We're going to try to be instead of linear or circular. What can you do? What processes can you change so that either within the company or with the people that we're working, it just gets easier? And then they might say, we're making very hard for people to give stuff back because we have these long forms. Okay. Can you show me the form? And then we get in another conversation because we don't know all of these things.
Yeah.
And it's a very kind of going to the back office guy is usually a very good piece of advice.
They even have a good coffee machine. So then you have some time to chat and
Awesome. So we have like these, I will do a little bit of a summary of the principles that we already covered, which always in this conversation, we get like a few little pointers and then we will see how these grow then further in the writing and stuff. But I would like to summarize them already now, so that then we can go in the, this makes me think about this. So for the summary, the first one that we have is this idea of writing a secret, shitty personal manifest. So to reveal, to write down our own values and then to see how our job makes sense with this value or not. And then that brings us to this lovely and very poetic edge of mattress principle, which kind of asks us to reflect back if there is this itch to stay in bed. Maybe it's that something in our manifesto is not happening in real life. And if this itch comes back and back, maybe look back at the manifesto and maybe you see, that's why I don't want to go out of bed. And then maybe you can change something. And then there are these two big questions. One, which is you say, hey, be stupidly naive about your field by asking, why is this done like that? But not in a consultant way where it's like, I know better than you, but rather by saying, hey, this is my intent. This is the stuff that I want to discover. This is where I want to bring change. And because of that, I'm super interested in what you're doing. And then the second thing is helping people to transition from this linear thing from we create stuff and then we dispose stuff to, hey, maybe before we dispose, there's some stuff that we can bring back and we can have some circularity. And that asks us the question, what happens at the end of the service. So knowing all of that in the little summary, is there something that we missed in our little conversation where you feel, oh, this is still something that I'd like to share that I think could be helpful for people?
Actually, this helped a lot to summarize it. Yeah. I think one aspect, especially regarding the last point, I think I often noticed that media or social media or newspapers, they are often focusing on some sustainability topics. So they are maybe focusing on, there's so much microplastic from our garments in the rivers and seas or lakes, or they're like, we should reduce our packaging. I think there are so many emotionally loaded topics, and we don't really set them, we don't put them in relation to other impacts that we have on the environment. And I think that's, I'm saying that because it often helps to go one step back and observe, like, where do we really have the biggest impact on sustainability, and where do we have a leverage? And I think because you mentioned circularity and recycling, and a lot of people think about recycling as one major step for circularity, but I think it's also helpful to think about other strategies. Like, for example, there's the reuse or renting or reducing or not buying at all. So these are all different strategies. They are often called R-strategies. And connected to that is also to really use science-based data to evaluate, like, what's important and not focus on the topics which are important in the newspaper or on social media. And I think there are great tools and literature online available for free. For example, from perspective as a product designer, I think it's quite helpful to use Wordly. This is a simple LCA life cycle assessment tool to check on which material could be a better fit for my project. And I think it just helps to really evaluate the impact. And then from this, you can decide on which topic do you want to work on and with which strategy within the circular economy. Just a small but long note to that point.
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm doing these summaries. So it's like in weddings where when you say, now, if someone has something to say, it's the right moment, or they will be married together, then there is the one guy. I love her. That's the moment where he remembers. So
at least in the movies, yeah.
At least in the movies. I never saw that in real life. I'd love to see it.
Hopefully not on our own weddings, though.
Yeah, yeah. But photos could be fun. But more seriously, I think there, from what you're saying, is to not get stuck in an emotionally loaded topic. Not get stuck in this kind of tunnel vision of, carbon. We just have to think about carbon. Or we just have to think about recycling. Because that's the thing that we see on the news. And just then to ask, okay, what could be all the things that we can do, and where does it really make a difference? Because once you do the math, that's also super interesting. Because when you do the math, then suddenly you realize, yes, we could do here a few things carbon related, but impact is not so big. But on another part, wow, there in the reuse part, for example, we could do much more. And yeah, I'm going to check out also these R strategies. I think that's that's something that I'm going to explore a little bit further. But before we come to our conclusion, is there another resource that you'd like to recommend for people who are interested in this topic? So we had the book from Viktor Papanek where you said, okay, this changed your life. So this is surely a good recommendation. But is there another recommendation? Can be a tool, can be an article, anything else that you say, this would be interesting for people.
So something which helped me in the beginning of my research profession, I think, was the resources from Ellen MacArthur Foundation. They have a lot about the circularity approach, and they have tools for it, and they have some reports. So it's quite interesting to get into that. And not sure how much. Yeah, there are actually also some service topics, I think, especially like in urbanness. So because it's a lot about how do you include your community and stuff like that. I think this is a great institution for more know-how.
Awesome. And so you shared a lot today. And as it's a common practice between lovely people, once you give something, sometime you receive back. So my question to you is, what can people do for you? Because now you shared a lot for people, and so they received a lot from you. So if they want to do something for you, what could they do?
So I think, as I said in the beginning, maybe I want to have a positive impact on the world with my work. So I think it's great if the people already re-question a bit them, that their work that they are doing, and checking if they are doing something that is important for them and the environment and the community. I think that's already a big achievement if we can reevaluate our own values. And if that's not enough, feel free to check out own mattresses. So that's something that is coming up. I think market launch is in August 2024. Maybe you will hear from time to time something about Ecomate mattresses, and feel free to get in contact with me and have a chat about sleeping, mattresses, and all these boring but important topics.
That's it. So if someone had like a moment where they said, oh, I'm going to write my own secret manifesto, let him know. I think that's always lovely when you see the impact of a conversation. If something inspired you, let him know. And if you're interested about the mattresses, obviously have a look at them. And I'm excited to hear more about the launch. Make sure to let me know when the launch is so that I can share
that
with you. But for now, the one important thing for me to say as the last thought is really thank you so much to you, because you invested 1 hour of your precious time with me. And I've learned a lot, as always, with you. And it's been a pleasure. And I'm excited to have more conversation in the future with you, obviously.
Thank you. Thank you as well. Great effort. Bye.
Bye-bye. Cheers.